You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Tuesday, 28 January, we've got Starbucks results after market close in the US. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from Cape Town via Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Carmen Mepurwani, the Lewis trading update. Finally, one the market actually liked. John Lewis from F&B, their property broker survey. Lots of green shoots is my reading. Adele Dutoy from the Rooibos Council. What is Rooibos and what is the global demand and potential for it? This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb. From Sasol to Pick and Pay, high risks, high rewards, or just trouble. A look at the recovery potential of stocks that beckon the brave. Bloomberg, Nvidia just lost $589 billion in value, the most for a single stock in market history. That's thanks to DeepSeek. The loss in value, more than the market cap of 487 companies in the S&P 500. Morning markets, US was red, S&P down 1.5%, NASDAQ down 3%. Over in the East, mostly green, Sydney up 0.1%, Tokyo down 0.6%, Hong Kong up 0.1%, and Tencent 1.9% higher. Commodities are red. Gold is down. Gold is 2,770. Brent 77.10. Platinum's flat 956. Palladium 972. Rand is 18.85. Bitcoin 102,600. Top 40 opening call 130 points. That's a little under 0.2% higher.
MoneyWeb Now. On the Money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Carmen Mepurwani. Carmen, appreciate the early morning time. We're getting the trading updates from retailers. As I said in the intro there, most of them have not been liked by market, not necessarily because they were bad, because of expectations. The Lewis update looked quite strong, and the market liked it, pricing the stock up 3.5%. Your take on the update from Lewis yesterday?
Definitely looking quite healthy based on their commentary that this is on the back of improving consumer confidence and obviously their stronger marketing campaigns. But I did give pause to think about it, and I do wonder what impact the two-pot system might have had in this boost as well. Granted, this period also, the third quarter also covers Black Friday, etc., but it seems to be buoyed by definitely an uptick in the consumer's outlook.
I take the point. I mean, they specifically mentioned some cash sales. They also mentioned the last period, sort of Black Friday and the like. What we also saw is other revenue, which is very much Lewis. I mean, I often call them a bank that masquerades as a furniture business. That other revenue being income, auxiliary services, that was really strong for them.
Absolutely. It does give me hints of Truers as well, as you've said. Lewis Furniture, their credit sales account for about 68%, which is in the realm of what Truers does as well. So as you've mentioned, rightly so, a lot of their money comes from interest income in terms of the clientele. And obviously, you'd look at what the demographic is that actually goes to Lewis. So it does masquerade, and I think it's true, but the system has worked.
I take your point. I'm not knocking them for a second. It absolutely has worked. More broadly, as consumers, and you, our listeners, are all consumers in South Africa, we are better positioned than we were a year ago. Inflation down, interest rates down, two-pot money out there. One year doesn't make it's moving and booming, perhaps is the phrase.
No, and that's just it. We'll see later in the year what it looks like in terms of the full year results.
That is certainly the sense. We will start getting results, and of course that will give us more detail. This is obviously for the periods ending December. But our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter, your take on the Lewis update. Do you hold it in your portfolio? I've got to say, it is one I've missed. They buy back shares aggressively. They pay a good dividend. Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn and Twitter. Let your money benefit from experience with StanLib Asset Management. Find out about StanLib Global Select Fund, which follows an investment discipline that has delivered results for three decades.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with John Lewis, he's property strategist, FNB Commercial Property Finance. John, appreciate the early morning time. Your property broker survey market balance for fourth quarter 2024. This is an owner-occupied survey. This is not going and chatting with sort of the listed REITs, as I understand. This is very much more at the, as I say, the owner-occupied part of the market.
No, we just emphasize that all the brokers have to include owner-occupied. They participate in owner-occupied markets, but they do have listed funds that they deal with as well. So it's across the market, but with some emphasis on owner-occupied, yes.
Okay, got you on that. And what we're seeing is if we look at average time on market, which is perhaps hard to measure, but in many senses, a good indicator of activity, and it declined across all three sectors in the fourth quarter. So, I mean, certainly things are picking up and looking better.
Yes. So if one looks at it by sector, I don't like to put too much emphasis on the exact weeks on the market because it's a small sample size in commercial, so it's difficult to estimate. But industrial and warehouse space being the shortest time on the market, followed by retail and then office being the longest, that's generally been the pecking order in terms of performance between the sectors for a good few years now. But more important, I think, is that if one looks at the broker's perception of the direction over the part of the 6 months leading up to the fourth quarter survey, they do perceive a declining average time on markets of properties for sale in all three sectors. All three they perceive to have been improving, industrial and retail and office markets across the board.
And I take your point. It is that trend that so much matters. And industrial and retail, and we'll chat on property and office in a moment, they perceive that demand is exceeding supply, which is showing positivity again and showing that direction, that trend that is looking better than it had a couple of years ago.
Yes, so industrial demand has exceeded supply in their perception for quite some time, for the last few years. Industrial been the outperformer of the three major commercial property sectors. A lot has to do with the warehousing and logistics side of industrial property as opposed to manufacturing. Warehousing and logistics requirements changing, modernizing, changing. It's a structural change. We are moving a lot to more online retail and so on, and online type of delivery. So that's been a positive structural change, and we've seen industrial property in many parts of the world outperforming the others in recent years. Retail is more that's just recent that demand has exceeded supply. It also had big oversupplies, almost like the office market a few years ago. Consumers have been struggling. We know that. We know that there's been a good supply of new retail property in these suburban markets for many years. So it's only in the last quarter or two that investor demand has exceeded supply. So it's making something of a comeback. And then the struggler, office space, still heavily oversupplied. And of course, if you look at the tenant market of office space, also high vacancy rates too. This has been a less appealing one for investors for quite some years. Even there were high vacancy rates nationally, even before COVID-19 lockdowns and the work from home surge. Office space has been in various ways, the financial, real estate, business services sector, the sectors that demand a lot of office space. They've been making productivity improvements, so their employment numbers haven't been growing that much. It's more the GDP, but through technological improvements. And then we've also moved to things like hoteling of desk space and hot desking, which means if you don't have a book desk for a single person 365 days of the year, you require less desk space, because at any given time there's always a group of people that aren't in the office, they're on leave or something. So in many ways we've been improving there's been a declining desk space requirement, I guess you could call it, in many corporates. And so the office market has had to deal with these structural changes. Then came the work from home surge, that added to the challenges. So it's still making its way back from an oversupplied situation. It hasn't been the appealing one for the investors for quite some time.
Absolutely. Is that sort of the hybrid working model where we work from home a bit, we do a couple of days in the office? Does that seem to be settling? I mean, certainly from the US, I've seen a couple of the big companies sort of moving to more days in the office, if not 5 days in the office. Are we sort of finding that settling, or is there still potential for shifts in that trend?
So there's more data in places like the US than there is here, but I suspect we follow something of a similar trend. Mm-hmm. And it seems to have settled in recent years, where hybrid and work from home levels were elevated from pre-COVID levels, as you would expect. But, you know, obviously there was a significant comeback to the office after the hard lockdowns. It's tough to tell. I mean, you got to be careful of listening to noise. I mean, there are corporates making noise about back to the office more. But, you know, they're the noisy ones. The ones who've settled into hybrid models are just quiet. You don't hear much from them. So there's there's a bias in the noise levels. And there's kind of a bit of a subtle war across the world between employees and employers, the employees wanting hybrid far more than employers. But even when you do have back to the office drives, you know, where a lot of the corporates have kept their office space through COVID lockdowns. So they've kept leasing the same amount, similar amounts of office space. It's just been standing half empty for a number of years. So even if many corporates were to say, okay, you know, it's not 2 days in the office now, it's 5 days, that doesn't necessarily mean a need for more office space. It just means that the attendance rates in the existing office space will be higher through the week. So I'm not sure that makes a big difference to the amount of office space that's needed by many corporates if there is a genuine back to the office drive that's going to succeed.
Gotcha. Yeah, absolutely. I take your point. They've kept the space. The last question. I mean, we're expecting a stronger economy into 2025. F&B is forecasting 325 basis point rate cuts over the next 6 months. I mean, both of these bode well for all three sectors. Office, perhaps even a little bit more as we get some GDP growth. Although, to your point, they've kept the space. But this should boost or aid the recovery that we have been seeing and continue the positive trend.
I think a moderate recovery, yes. You know, industrial, because it's been benefiting from a structural change for the last few years, that might not have much more runway to improve. But I think certainly for office space, and I think some of the investor office demand will be old office space that's repurposed for residential. That would be the plan, and that may pick up, because residential demand often picks up when interest rates decline. So and residential development demand, that's these mild interest rate cutting with some mild GDP improvement, if that's to play out, mild recovery. We haven't started the year yet economically sort of solidly. The manufacturing PMI, for instance, of December was pretty poor. Third quarter of last year was still weak. So we haven't yet seen the genuine signs of economic growth improvement yet, but we do expect it during the course of this year.
We'll leave it there. That's John Lewis, property strategist, F&B Commercial Property Finance. Appreciate the early morning time. Let your money weather the storms with Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in the Stanlib Global Select Fund, a diversified all-weather equity portfolio sub-managed by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Adele De Toy from the Rooibos Council. Adele, appreciate the time. Rooibos, we all know it as a tea which many love, but there's an important component in that South Africa is now recognized as the sole producer. I mean, it's kind of like the protection we see around champagne and port and other things from Europe. This really is now our product as a country?
Absolutely. Good day to you, Simon. Yes, rooibos grows only in South Africa and nowhere else in the world. And it has the protected designation of origin status from the European Union, which means that if rooibos grows anywhere else in the world, it cannot be called rooibos. Mm-hmm. And of course, protecting our local producers and supporting our local economy.
How big is the market? Because we know it is a tea, but actually it's much more than tea. How big is that market?
It's really difficult to quantify because there's so many different aspects, and also down the line, people that use rooibos. It's said to say that around 10 billion cups of rooibos tea is drank, but the value we can't really pinpoint specifically. But if we look at green rooibos, we can definitely look, or the extracts coming from rooibos, we can look at valuing those.
That's part of the point. I mean, there's the tea, which we drink, but there's the extracts as well, which go into a myriad of different processes and potential products.
Correct. So rooibos is very versatile, and it's being used in many different sectors like food and beverages. If we look like functional foods and beverages, even cosmetics and hair care, there's nutraceuticals, and also even the pharmaceutical industry is taking an interest into rooibos.
You mentioned green. I know red rooibos, and in fact, I know the red cappuccino. I think it came out a couple of decades of time. Is green essentially the same, just with some small nuances, much like we get red and black teas?
Yes, so both come from the same plant. Mm-hmm. As we know, rooibos is fermented, so that's when it gets that rich amber color and flavor. So basically what they do is they mix it with a little bit of water, lay it out in the sun, and then the fermentation takes it further. And with green rooibos, they eliminate the fermentation process. So the plant is immediately dried. It also has a more greenish tinge. It has a more grassy flavor, and it also has a little bit more antioxidants than the fermented rooibos we know.
In terms of cultivation in South Africa, I mean, is it smaller scale farmers? Is it large commercial, a blend of?
There's something of everything. So there are some large commercials, and then there's also smaller community farms.
And do we manufacture much? I mean, or are we exporting, in a sense, kind of like the raw material?
Yes, for extracts, definitely we export to a couple of countries. The biggest ones will be in Europe and Asia, and also in North America. But if we look at rooibos as such, as a tea, some of the biggest exports markets would be Japan, also Germany and the UK.
Is it as well known beyond our borders? I mean, I grew up with rooibos in the house. I just assumed everyone had it. I mean, is the rest of the world as au fait with it as perhaps Africans are?
No, they're not, but they are really growing an interest into rooibos because it has such a unique story. So if we look at the bigger tea drinking nations, they will know rooibos better. Also the nations where there are a lot of expats. So we're looking here at some European countries like the UK and the Netherlands, and even in the US. But definitely Japan is very interested in rooibos because of its anti-aging benefits. And of course, they drink a lot of tea.
And coincidentally seem to live forever at the same time. We're using it as tea. Exporting it in various different sort of components. I imagine there's, from yourselves at the Rooibos Council, doing a huge amount of effort to create this awareness and to get it out there as a South African product, and of course to boost our economy.
Absolutely. So one of the biggest things that the council focuses on is research into rooibos. We know it's good and we know it's healthy, but proving that on a scientific level is one of the biggest things that we are interested in and continually doing. And then also just communicating that information from the research that is done and making people more aware and getting them more interested in rooibos, because it's such an affordable and accessible way to improve your health.
We'll leave that there. That's Adele Du Toit. Rooibos Council, appreciate the insights. That's it for today. I was chatting with Rory Kutseka Jacobson yesterday from Alan Gray, talking around their reducing exposure to SA Inc. He's not bearish. He's just saying, when Mr. Price is up 50%, Mr. Price 100%, Fashini up 50%, take some of those profits. We'll ask you, are you reducing local exposure in your portfolio? About half of you said yes, taking some lovely profits. Rest split between, nope, more to come. And some of you saying, I missed the run. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. If you're loving the show, please leave us a 5-star rating and an awesome review in your podcatcher of choice. And we'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.